Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great guest coming up for you next. We'll be joined by Dr. Melinda Brennan, the executive director of the Wisconsin ACLU, to discuss ICE detainer requests and local law enforcement, how it works, the use of surveillance and facial recognition technologies, and sheriff's departments across the state that may be profiting off of the pain inflicted by Donald Trump's masked, unidentified immigration thugs across our state. So hold on, got a little bit of news for everybody this afternoon. The Brewers dropping their second game to the Cubs in a 5-game in 4-days series. That score 6-4 concluded just before 4 o'clock. The second game in today's doubleheader, first pitch is 7:10. Coverage on your local civic media affiliate. I think we've got about 6 of them that carry Brewers coverage. Just go check out your local affiliate, and we will have game coverage this afternoon. Also, we've been talking about with our last guest, Angela Lang of Block here in Milwaukee, the fact that Donald Trump is attacking mail-in voting and voting machines. Because I know I trust human beings to count millions of ballots and not get any of that wrong, right? I digress. Yes, Donald Trump attacking mail-in voting, and a bipartisan group of former Wisconsin elected leaders criticized Donald Trump today. That group, by the Democracy Defense Project, includes former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, former Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, former U.S. Rep. Scott Klug, and former Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate. These are folks that have been in leadership in Wisconsin politics on both sides of the aisle for a long time. They understand that vote by mail is just fine and perfectly secure. And yes, we could have drop boxes too. We just put a camera on them and make sure they're secure. All of this is smoke and mirrors by the administration. We've got some new entrants into the Wisconsin 2026 electoral field, in case you didn't hear. Looks like Wisconsin State Rep. Francesca Hong may be throwing her hat into the state governor's race. We broke news here on Civic Media last week. Looks like State Senator Kel DeRoy is also in that race. David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive, definitely in that race. His formal announcement to come. Sarah Rodriguez officially announced a while ago. And a political unknown, Ryan Sternad, a AmFam stadium vendor, just this week throwing his hat in the ring as well. So watch this space. So much more to come. We've got a couple of new candidates in the 8th Congressional District running against guy with the good hair, but not so much between the ears, Tony Weed, up in the 8th Congressional District. So watch this space. More to come. I want to bring on my next guest, Dr. Melinda Brennan. Thanks so much for being with me today. Your organization has done some incredible research, because none of this is actually published by local law enforcement agencies. Describe the data that you obtained through open records requests and where this information resides and what we're talking about specifically. Set the stage for us so that we can understand what the data is telling us.
I absolutely will, Maggie. Thanks for having me on to talk about something so important. Want to give folks a sense of how much money's involved, how many people are impacted, how many counties. So just going to do a highlight overview of it. We're talking about between 2021 and 2024, $7 million coming into the state of Wisconsin, a little bit more than that. We're talking about 29 counties that received those funds. And essentially, it's a choice to sell our neighbors and their privacy for some bucks. And if we're talking about detainers, let's think around 3,000 people. So are you willing to sell data and invasive questions that have only racial profiling behind them? Are you willing to do that for about $7 million over 3 years? It seems to me like that's not a whole lot of money to be making our communities weaker, to be making industries weaker, to be making people leave because they're afraid, afraid of being asked questions about their status, regardless of if they're a citizen or not. and all kinds of folks. It is not the thought process behind 287G agreements is that, well, we can provide you some funds and you'll provide us some information and you'll hold some folks a little bit longer. The reality is people are going to be detained regardless of their status, whether citizen or other, because of racial profiling. We know the disproportionate impact. So don't for one second think that this isn't a racist set of policies. It is. Don't for one second think that your neighbor or someone you know isn't going to be impacted. Don't think that for some reason, wherever you are on the political spectrum, that you wouldn't be potentially detained or be asked a question if you encounter law enforcement. Sheriffs have the right to refuse these things. Tell them no. Tell them you don't want this in your community. Tell them not to spread. We've got 14 active 287G agreements with sheriffs in the state. We don't want it to grow anymore. We want it to roll back. Folks can talk to their electeds, but absolutely call your sheriff. You can take a look, and I'm happy to provide a report that we just did, and it was a series of open records requests, which sometimes are fulfilled very quickly, and sometimes are like pulling teeth, because people do not want more public insight into this, because these are just racist policies. There's very little money exchanged for the harassment of folks that are just our neighbors. And I don't think you can make sense of it for the money. And I certainly hope you can't make sense of it ethically. And what we've got to do is convince our sheriffs that this is not the course of action. And we've also got to convince local law enforcement that they can't be sharing whatever surveillance tech they've got, because it will disproportionately impact communities of color and any immigrant communities all across different statuses.
So I want to unpeel this onion a little bit, because there is so much going on here. And I want people to understand that there is really a spectrum involved here as to how your county's sheriff's department may handle ICE detainer requests. I'm going to speak about Milwaukee County, because I was asked back in, the date on this is 2017. I had to look at my certification letter to the Department of Justice. I was asked to certify Milwaukee County's compliance with various federal laws relating to detainer requests under the threat that certain funding would be withheld from Milwaukee County. Here's what Milwaukee County does if they get a detainer request. If the person is in our custody, the county may indicate to ICE when that person is going to be released, when there is no longer any 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment compliant reason for that person's continued detainer under state constitutional and federal constitutional law. In other words, the county, and we always have an over, nearly always have a problem with total numbers of folks in our incarceration facilities, be that the community reintegration center or our county jail facility. So they will alert ICE when someone who has a violent criminal record is being released. They will not keep them themselves, because we don't have space for it and we can't afford it, no matter what the federal government is promising. And Milwaukee County, I advise them very clearly, you could be sued civilly for millions of dollars for unconstitutionally depriving a person of their liberty and freedom, because those rights enshrined in our federal and state constitutions are not limited or exclusive to citizens. So I was able to easily certify compliance with all federal laws back in 2017 and did so. Other counties will actually hold people. That's one way, and there is now the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, otherwise known as SCAP, that provides these funds in exchange for violating people's fundamental liberty rights. And then there are the 287G programs, which are named for this very specific federal code provision and has a very formalized training process for sheriff's deputies. They effectively get deputized by immigration enforcement officials and act in your county as if they were federal immigration officials. Now, Dr. Brennan, I want to pause, make sure I've described, I think, what the spectrum is. To me, doors number 2 and 3, so the SCAP funding and the 287G programs, are arguably unconstitutional. What is your thought from the ACLU's perspective?
Well, I will sure tell you that your analysis is correct, and I really appreciate you stepping that out. And I'm sorry, but I don't understand how the federal government can overreach into local communities. And they do so by providing exactly what you said, those SCAP funds, and saying, well, let us hold people in your facility. We'll pay you for doing that. And essentially, you're holding people, especially with this current administration, who clearly does not believe in the rule of law. Who are they going to be holding on these detainers, right? And every time that there's an opt-in to receiving those funds, and every time a sheriff signs one of those agreements that says, yes, we will cooperate with you, that means that the federal government is reaching into our local communities more and more. Either they're providing that cash as an incentive to hold people in facilities that clearly in Wisconsin, and there's been many, many news stories and coverage over this, we don't have the room to do it.
Right.
And so if we don't already have the room to do it and we can't treat people humanely to be able to hold them, you're going to cooperate then with the federal government. And given that the federal government is looking to detain apparently as many people as possible, I don't think that you could call that money anything other than blood money.
Blood money, indeed. I mean, here is a very conceivable scenario where someone who has unpaid parking tickets is picked up because that can become a misdemeanor. They're in a county jail facility. Their name sounds like someone who may be in the country illegally. ICE issues a detainer request. The person pays the tickets, and now their only federal or any infraction that relates to the continued basis to hold them is the fact that the feds maybe think that this is the person that's here illegally. So now someone who has not committed any sort of crime at all is in, except for the non-payment of parking tickets, is now being detained for God knows how long in
that's
a
right.
county jail alongside all sorts of folks that have probable cause determinations for varying. So you're being held with criminals. This is sort of the point. It's the concentration camp in Florida, at CECOT, in El Salvador. These are people who, unless they're actually targeting violent criminals, which they say is what's happening as the cover, it's not. You've got folks never committed any sort of crime, as we would understand it, being held indefinitely in county facilities. Folks, we've got Dr. Melinda Brennan with us from Wisconsin's ACLU. She's the executive director there. We're going to talk about then separately some of the surveillance technologies. If you've got a local police department, if you've got a county sheriff's department that is cooperating with ICE and allowing the federal government to seize control of that police department or sheriff's department, what are they doing with their surveillance capabilities? And do you even know what your local PD's surveillance capabilities are? We're going to discuss that when we come back right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.